Right now, ish. Snobby Augustus needs a name.
Gang's all here. Right? It's been a while.
The augmented gang, even.
What's that?
The augmented gang. Even.
The augmented gang, yes. Phil,
now you're calling me fat.
The
you said it, not me.
Wait, who is the...
I know what augmented means.
Albert Goldman?
Oh, John, Paul, George, Albert Goldman, and Ringo.
That's funny. So Phil,
he played trombone in the Beatles.
Great.
What was that for? That sounds really familiar.
He wrote a scathing a biography of John Lennon.
Oh, right.
Kind of a Kitty Kelly type thing.
Yeah, they tried to... SNL did a sketch where they explained the backstory of how he came to hate John Lennon so much. It's because he got kicked out of the Beatles.
And he was a trombone player.
Similar to the Clarences.
The Clarences, yes.
Yes.
She got taken around. The bitch don't care, man.
That, which, in my opinion, is the funniest.
That may be the funniest sketch ever in the history
of SNL. The trajectory, and we won't divert on this for too long, but the trajectory, how you go from, like, that Eddie Murphy to the Eddie Murphy that stood on stage at SNL's 40th anniversary and literally had nothing to say.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that shit's crazy.
It is crazy. And that's, you know what? It's funny that you say that. I thought the exact same thing at the time.
But the funny thing is, it's the opposite of funny when it happens.
No, he's lost all the funny. It's like when Joe Piscopo, like, pump iron all the funny out.
Yeah. Oh, it could be.
He, like, bulked up and became not funny.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, Kevin... You were on vacation last week. We were off for a couple weeks.
I was. Yeah. I went to Hemingway's house. He says hi.
The one with all the cats?
Literally the one with all the cats.
Yes.
And these are all descendants of original Hemingway cats.
Yeah.
They have some weird genetic deformity or something?
Well, they have six toes.
They all walk around.
They all essentially look, I mean, they're cats, but they kind of have the run of the place. The most interesting thing I thought about, there are a lot of... We won't, it's not kind of that kind of show. But the most interesting thing related to the cats at Hemingway's place was that a lot of them were named after famous people, and they would call them by their first and last name. So it would be like, there's a little cemetery where they have like plaques with all these cats' names on them and when they were alive. So it'd be like, oh, Vincent Price was running around here for 20 years and Greta Garbo. And then, and then one will be like, Fluffy. Like, it was just, there's not like really any name or like rhyme or reason. But yeah, it was fun and hot as shit.
Well, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Florida.
Yeah, Florida.
Steam.
Temperature hot.
It was like I took a little piece of Mark's garage with me down there
sweet.
To the water. Yeah, it was.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I was going to say. I was going to make the comment, hot and sticky, like now? Like this?
If I'd have done, like, one of those, the little ship-in-the-bottle things or whatever, and I'd taken the cork off, and I just bottled some, like, Key West air and brought it back and then opened it in Mark Garage, there would be, like, no change. Like...
Well, because it would be just a tiny little bit of air.
Well, let's not get bogged down in science.
Okay.
Science, it's so pesky.
Yes.
All right. Hey...
Pesky science.
I have a feeling this is how it's going to go today, so we might as well just get going here.
It kind of ties in with the theme of the album, science being pesky.
Sure.
Yeah.
We'll
touch on it.
We'll get into that in a minute, but let's go on.
So you are, in fact, Shane?
I am Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Phil.
I'm Kevin.
And Mark.
Somebody likes it.
Kind of interesting to note that one of the dudes from Yes died.
Chris Squire,
which I guess is sort of the ultimate no, if you think about it. But
Dad's back.
Dad.
I tried to hold down the fort for you while you were gone.
Oh, that's good. I appreciate that.
You did a pretty good job at that, now that I think about that. Yeah.
I can't even remember what I said.
There were a couple little dad.
Yeah, dadisms.
Inflections.
Or groaners.
Yeah, but I did think that it was. I did a little bit of reading on him, and of course, I did think it was interesting that he was. Was he the only guy that was in that band that played on all 21 records?
I think he was.
I think that that's true. I believe that that's true.
Yeah, I think I read that too. It's that,
but it can't be confirmed because nobody cares.
Right, exactly.
Well, without that bass sound, whatever, they, you know. But it was a lot of those records were like Chris Squire and whoever he was playing with at the time.
Well, and like in the 70s, 21 years was about how long it took to listen to one of them. So,
okay, so the album that I picked for this week, since we've talked a little bit about Styx and we've got much more to talk about them, but the one that I picked was Kilroy Was Here, which prior to taking it a spin for this show, I had only heard one song on it before.
Mr. Roboto.
Which was Mr. Roboto. And the reason that I thought about that song was, you know, a few weeks ago, you had been talking about songs that you loved when you were a little kid that you used to like to listen to in the skating rink.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one. I was trying to think of ones that were similar to me, songs that I like to roller skate to. And I remember that song. And I'm like, oh, I loved that song. What the hell does that song sound like? Because I couldn't remember. And then I put on that song, and what followed were 4.5 minutes of some of the worst,
it's bad,
shittiest music I've ever heard. And yeah. I was like, oh, how can I not pick this album?
Well, because the question that I wanted to ask you as soon as I got here was, why do you hate me?
Well, look.
To that end, can I just, forgive me for interjecting, but can I just say that, Shane, maybe you shot me a note and said what this record was going to be, but it wasn't really clear to me when I got the text from you who chose it, and it was only when I sat down and like considered what we were being forced to listen to that I knew it had to come from you.
Absolutely.
Why is this?
Because unless
he's the only one of us who's really willing to on purpose pick a shitty record. Although, well, Mark did pick the biggest dog of them all.
Since I had,
wait, did you do the Meatloaf?
Well, yes, but yeah,
he did.
But since
Mark
I
did
had
meatloaf.
The we since had the I meatloaf. Had the Hijack show a couple of weeks ago, he knew it couldn't possibly be me. So the only possible
process of elimination.
No, yeah, right.
Does anybody like this album at this table?
Anywhere?
No, not at this table.
You know what? I'll go on record and say that no one has actually said that they hate it except me and Ryan. But
I hate it.
I'm going to go on.
I hate it.
Look.
Oh shit!
No.
We have the lone dissenting justice.
No, not at all. I'm just going to say, if it were not for Mr. Roboto, which has a lot of sentimental value to me, this would be a Meatloaf. So no, I do not like.
Okay, here's my. Are you trying to like?
I was going to wave this around like I was at a concert for a minute, but I clearly can't use tools.
He says holding a lighter.
So yeah. Anyway.
So this is what I have to say about that. All right. As far as this is bad, bad,
oh, thanks,
bad,
Ryan.
But not in like this moment's egregious, hate filled way that I felt about Bat Out of Hell. This is more like it's bad and I never want to hear it again. But I kind of feel like how I felt about in Boogie Nights when they are recording, you know, Feel My Heat, like you feel simultaneously amused and sorry for them. Like, that's kind of how I feel.
Well, okay, so, you know, I like to try to find something redeeming about even the worst of records. So about this, I will say they seem to be playing on key. Tempos were consistent.
Sure.
They seem to have pretty classically trained voices. And if Meatloaf is bad regional theater, this is at least like
Summerstock,
Or like off Broadway, or like maybe played a week on Broadway to really bad reviews and got kicked off.
It also stuck with me, like how the Domo Arigato phrase like kind of remains like this sort of tertiary part of the lexicon. Like you hear it every now and again, like every now and again, and no one's surprised when anybody says it.
I don't even actually remember what it means. It's Japanese, right?
It's like thank you very much.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
Mr. Roboto.
Yeah. And so they even like translate it for you in the song. But like beyond that, like I was like, how is it that like this like steaming pile of shit is like years later, like it's become part of the lexicon, and it's because that song went to number 3.
That's true.
So,
Well, I mean, and all that really says is that it's bad, as horrible as people's opinions are now, they were even worse. Ostensibly, this record is a concept record. And the concept is pretty easy to understand in that basically in the future, rock and roll has been outlawed. And
That's like a whole subgenre in rock music anyways.
Okay, this is the synopsis of this of the story. It's the one paragraph synopsis on Wikipedia. The album's somewhat rock operatic story tells of a future where rock music is outlawed by a fascist government and the MMM, the majority for musical morality. The story's protagonist, Kilroy, is a former rock star who has been imprisoned by MMM leader Dr. Righteous. He escapes using a disguise, according to the album's famous song, Mr. Roboto, when he becomes aware that a young musician, Jonathan Chance, is on a mission to bring back rock music.
Holy shit.
So you can see that this album really appeals to higher values. It's amazing to me that we're talking so much shit about it. And in fact, like, this is a really altruistic...
This is rock activism.
Well, you know, and speaking of which, like...
For only rock music. Yes.
Backing out against the intro that you may have heard at the top of the episode, there's a little bit of, you know, this is kind of like, it was a concept album that was a reaction to the idea that there was some backward masking on their previous record. That was what the claim was, and so they sort of used this as a, and there are obviously other things at play, but they use this as an idea for another concept record that would be an us against them type situation.
Yeah, and they did a poor job. I guess that's my point. They didn't do a very good job of making a concept album.
Well, this record broke them up, didn't it?
It did, kind of.
Oh, yeah.
I wish they'd released it earlier.
I think the tour is what actually did it.
You know what? I want to go back to this backward masking thing, but I want to do it after we listen to Mr. Roboto, because people out there, if you haven't heard this shit yet, you need to hear it.
Settle
so you can understand
in.
What we're hating.
I also think it's kind of funny that, like, it's basically a disco song that's saving rock and roll. Like, what the fuck? Get your shit straight.
You know, a couple of things worth mentioning. One, Dennis DeYoung is among a class of rock and roll over-enunciators that fucking drive me crazy. Like, I can't get past it. Like, I just can't. The guy, like, every syllable is like, you have to recognize where the beginning and
You're
the end of it is.
Wondering who I am.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly. I was like, and the dude in the REO Speedwagon does the same fucking thing.
Yeah, they're going on tour together.
Of course they did. Of course.
Well, they are, like, now.
On
REO
a cruise
Speedwagon,
ship?
Though,
who's
he
going?
Has an unnecessary A, like, what's his fuck from Metallica does?
James Hetfield?
Yeah, I mean, right in the storm out.
Yeah, anyway.
And he just adds superfluous us to everything.
Yeah. Well, this is interesting, kind of. Oh, I'm sorry.
I just have one more thing, which is that this is the second dumbest line in rock music behind
Hunger, It's a Hunger.
Hunger, It's a Hunger. This is a secret, secret, I got a secret. I was like, wow, you really got
to
use that
and
word three times.
We also have to mention that at least three out of the five of us were doing a robot during that.
Ryan was doing a really arthritic robot.
I was doing more of a American bandstand or jazz handsy kind of. Finger snapping,
shaking my head.
Can I read you? I just want to read the first stanza of the first verse. It's, "You're wondering who I am, machine or mannequin, with parts made in Japan. I am," and it even says it on AZ Lyrics here, "the modern man."
Modern.
He doesn't say modern. He says modern.
But he's a robot, so he's not human. So he's prone to make mistakes.
He'll have glitches.
And like my
Wait,
GPS.
That's not how that works.
Oh, okay.
You know, instead of Chacon, my
Mark's
GPS
like,
says Kaikon. things like that.
Yeah, okay. All right. That kind of wraps that into that.
Is that like how we say manchak?
Well, it could be this. So if he's a modern robot, then at that point that's what, 8-bit? Like maybe he's just not that good of a big robot. Like he's an Atari.
Good point to be made. Good point. So
he's like the little guy from was it Pitfall, where you like have to jump over the.
he just kind of gets stuck there, swinging back and forth. Over the
band. Yeah. They might be the worst band from Chicago ever. They might like out shitty Smashing Pumpkins
or Chicago.
Smashing Pumpkins at least has like a couple records that don't suck.
They're right. Not.
Siamese Dream and Gish, I'll give you.
Yeah.
Who cares? One amazing song is worth everything from this.
Well,
I will
go on record saying there are at least two Styx songs from prior records to this that I do like, and that's Renegade and Too Much Time on My Hands.
Okay.
And
Blue Collar Man's not bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Like,
man?
If you grew up in the burbs, like, you were forced to listen to this shit.
We didn't know any different.
I grew up in a small town. Like, I mean.
You know, come on. Here's the thing. Everybody's Dave Grohl nowadays, and we're all super into the DC punk scene.
Yeah. 30 years ago. All I listened to was Discord bands from the time I was 6.
Look, it's ridiculous. There's a lot of shit that I listened to growing up that I can't stand now, and I know you guys are the same. Like,
sure.
It's not like,
yeah, sure.
Well, no, I think I mentioned last week, like the Grease soundtrack. I really liked when I was 6, but I think I can be excused now. I listen to it now, and it's really bad.
Okay, getting back really quick. I want to read a little bit about this song that we just listened to, Mr. Roboto. I'll tell you about the concept of it.
Hey, is it about robots?
Okay, so no, it's. Well, here, I don't want to. Somebody is really geeky and really likes Styx. That's all we're going to say. But.
Is he called Dystopian Motherfucker?
No, it's Dennis DeYoung, actually.
Oh, sure.
I'm going to read just the paragraph that tells the story of this song in relation to the concept album. The song tells part of the story of Robert Orrin Charles Kilroy, in parentheses, his initials are ROCK, rock. In the rock opera, Kilroy was here. Phil is shaking his head, as well he should be. The song is performed by Kilroy, a rock and roll performer who is placed in a futuristic prison for rock and roll misfits by the anti-rock and roll group, The Majority from Musical Morality, and its founder, Dr. Everett Righteous. The Roboto is a model of robot which does menial jobs in the prison. Kilroy escapes the prison by overpowering a Roboto prison guard and hiding inside its emptied-out metal shell. When Jonathan Chance finally meets Kilroy, Kilroy unmasks and says, "I'm Kilroy!" And that's how the album starts. And then it goes down from there. You never really understand what's happening. Like, there's no dramatic arc. They don't sound like
there's
love
songs. There's
nothing
happening.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, dude, I about dozed off about halfway through that.
It's not well put together. I just at least get a fucking... a narrative that makes some, like, you know, Pink Floyd, The Wall. I don't want to listen to it, but I can understand what it's about, you know, even though it gets a little obtuse. There's no story.
Well, what seems to be the overarching story behind this record is that there was strife, there were power struggles happening within the band. There was sort of the school of Tommy Shaw that was a little bit more rocky.
Rock and roll, yeah.
Yeah, and then Dennis DeYoung with all this theatrical bullshit. And apparently he had more of the hits to his name. And so at least the legend behind this record is that Dennis DeYoung sort of drove and the other guys sort of had to follow because he had more clout at that point.
Well, yeah.
And then it all came to a head after this record was done and they tried to tour and it was a huge failure and basically there was a schism within the band.
It did hit number one and sold a million copies, but
it was their first record in a while that didn't sell
multiple. Oh my God. Oh, so you mentioned earlier, Kevin, about part of the impetus for this album, for the concept of this album, coming from them being accused of backmasking. And so they have a song in their album Paradise Theater. It's an anti-cocaine anthem.
Snowblind.
That's right.
And so they took that to heart, the PMRC, which those of you that grew up in the 80s and listened to anything.
Tipper Gore.
So anyway, on the I remember seeing this album in the stores, and they had pushed, you know, I guess it wasn't selling as well as they thought, and they had racks and racks and racks of them pushed up to the front of the store, and they all had stickers on them saying, like, this album contains backmasking. And so they actually did put some backmasking in this, and they are they're the Latin phrase. Well, I'm not going to try to pronounce them, but they're the two Latin phrases from the reverse side of the Great Seal of the United States.
Anuit coeptus novus ordo seclorum.
Gesundheit. Yeah, there you go. Right.
God.
Noosa Brothers Stereo.
Apple, which does is not Latin fall for far from the tree.
My work here is done. I would drop this mic if I wasn't still using it.
It means he, in parenthetically, God favors our undertakings. And the other one is, oh, wait, Novus Ordo Seclorum, a new order of the ages.
Does it say, oh, wait,
these are things
because
that
I would
you,
not
like,
be surprised.
Oh, are these incantations you use before or after you roll your 20-sided dice?
Yes.
I actually do want to listen to that song because that one is...
Johnny is the devil?
That one is the funniest one on the album. I don't know if we need...
None of these are good.
No. This one specifically, this
bad.
One is...
It's so
here's,
bad.
Here's
it's
a
good.
Question there, and I genuinely am wondering, does all backward masking talk about Paul McCartney, or is it just the Beatles?
I think
backward?
It was just the Beatles.
Okay.
I think Satan is where backmasking went right after.
Oh, shit. I get
Satan
the
is Lord.
Up.
Satan is Lord.
Here's to my sweet Satan.
Satan really liked the Beatles. He heard that. He's like, damn, I got to get on this.
Yeah. You know, it's one of those... Backmasking is one of those things that it's fascinating because it really consumed popular culture for a period of time.
It was taken really seriously.
It was taken seriously. Yeah. And it's so laughable now, even by people at the time who were strident about it destroying, like the Satan putting messages in our kids' heads and crazy stuff. It was taken very seriously.
Yeah, like the entire country had turned into that town from Footloose.
That was brilliant. Oh, nice let's, job.
Yeah, let's roll that shit.
Yeah, let's play that. It's called, so the name of the song is called Heavy Metal Poisoning.
I'm in my hazmat suit because of the heavy metal poisoning.
Did you also contract a cold?
Well, you can't really breathe in these things, Ryan. I can't see you through the visor.
Is it fogging up?
I might be dying.
Anyway, that song's fucking terrible.
Yeah, it's the closest thing to a rock song.
God damn. But this band is so bad, they make fucking Damn Yankees, which Tommy Shaw went on to go be in, look almost good.
Well, at least Damn Yankees had songs. You know, like, I don't want to listen to them.
Wasn't the Nuge in that, too?
The Nuge was in that.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck it. They would pause in the middle of shows and start bow hunting in the crowd.
Oh, Styx is so bad that the Nuge looked like a viable option.
Bitches.
Yeah, he sounded sane.
Yeah, that, wow, when you put that into that fucking perspective, like, that means a lot. I'm sorry, guys.
Wait. What just happened?
He says Dix is so bad, it makes
it
the
made
Nuge.
The Nuge look like a viable option.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You put it that way.
Well, the other interesting thing, I mean, do you guys find that, like, when you listen to some of this record, or any of it, really, that you go, like, somebody at some point had to go like, oh, that song is clearly finished now. There's nothing that can be done to improve that song.
It's perfect.
Yes. Which either means that steaming piece of shit was never going to get any better than a steaming piece of shit, or that they maybe just didn't care. Or they didn't recognize the difference between something good and something
well, they
bad.
Start,
they didn't recognize
this. They didn't recognize it. They start from a place, I mean, again, like we were talking, like, I mean, it's all fun and games and said in jest, but I mean, and the reality is, like, a lot, the reason why I personally don't like a lot of these bands from the 70s isn't because these bands just flat out suck, though this album does flat out suck. It's that it just comes from a place of music that I don't want to listen to necessarily.
Well, there's the word that kept coming back to me is bombast.
Well, like, but
Zeppelin is bombast. This is shit sandwich.
Well, just over the top.
Yeah, I get what you're
saying. It's preening.
Yeah.
Like, there's a little bit of it that
it's
I think
trying
is just
really
like,
hard.
Preening to a certain degree. Like, I think
so
it's just
precious.
Like searching for the spotlight, whatever that brings.
A lot of those shitty drum fills. He has some really bombastic drum fills that make no sense. Like, just out of nowhere, like, you know, just out of nowhere for no reason. Just to throw, just, you know, because he rocks. I'm sure he does that thing with the twirling of the sticks and everything.
And there's, like, rain.
Oh, sticks.
Yeah.
Oh! Damn! Fuck, man.
Yeah.
It's just getting...
It never ends, man.
I guess not. Yeah, I'm getting steamrolled.
Yeah, you're right.
But, so that song, Heavy Metal Poisoning, I just need to read a little bit about... And it sort of encapsulates, like we were talking about, how the backmasking or the... At the time, like, what had really captured the zeitgeist was the idea of rock and roll as this... It was just, like, rebellion personified, like this purity, like, you know, rock and roll ain't noise pollution, you know, and all that stuff. And this, you know, it was just this, it really...
No, it's that whole subgenre of, like, rock and roll's constantly under siege and, like, we're fighting back and, like, you can't take our rock and roll.
Yeah, you said it before when we were talking about Twisted Sister. Like, you know, I think there's just a thing in the 80s that, you know, the verb to rock was just a dangerous thing. Just that idea.
Like, oh, look at all the rocking going on. Like, ooh, I'm scared.
And that's the other thing. That's like, it kind of makes it super hilarious in retrospect. But at the time, well, no, I mean, of course it does. But like at the time, like being young during that time, like I remember like thinking on some level, oh, clearly this makes sense. We are under assault by people who don't want us to have fun. And so, like, that message was just something that was, like, milked, like, ad nauseum.
Especially, like, in the burbs, if you went to church every weekend, like, they would play on those anxieties that, like, young people would have. You know, like, authorities are trying to keep me down.
It's always a quick way to sell records, you know, like Manson did
it
in the 90s.
Yeah, it's totally marketing.
Oh, yeah.
There's always somebody that's... I mean, isn't there always somebody
I just remembered another one. There's an Ozzy Osbourne song, You Can't Kill Rock and Roll, that came out right. This is all, like, around, like, 1981 through 1984. Like, there was this, like, period of time where, there was rock and roll, and then there was this overarching zeitgeist.
It goes all the way back to, like, the 50s. What's that? Rock and roll is here to stay.
Yeah, I know. But I think it was kind of defined within, like, the you know, quote-unquote heavy metal. A certain aspect of heavy metal, like, personified that at that time. I just want to read a couple of the lyrics from Heavy Metal Poisoning. And
please do.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
Hang on, I need to get pen and paper. I got to write
this. Yeah, you do need to write this down.
Information down.
You got to be better than listening to the fucking thing.
I was kidding, Mark.
So the thanks, Mark, though. That was very helpful.
Yeah, Johnny on the spot over here.
Mark's always solving problems for us. Okay, the lyric, it starts, what the devil's going on? Why don't you turn that music down? You're going deaf, and that's for sure. But all you do is scream for more. Get the lead out, go for broke. Pop your pills and drink and smoke. Shoot those chemicals into your vein. Anything to ease the pain. Of what? So all of a sudden, I don't know.
How you read it with the cadence of the prison poetry contest winner, Tyrone Green Images.
Kill my landlord.
No, kill my landlord.
This is just an all Eddie Murphy show tonight.
It is, yeah. If he were here, he would have nothing to say.
So I think we're going to get out of here and go into the intermission. We're going to do something interesting today.
As opposed to all the other days.
And we're going to do something different.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, as opposed to, like, this whole record.
Yeah.
Well, no, it's...
Well, I guess it's tied in.
It's tied in.
Yeah, we'll specialness to come.
We'll talk about it on the other side. So what we're going to do today, oh, I just stole from you, so.
I know. And now I can't, like, I still can't say it and then not be conscious of it, but I kind of totally don't fucking care, so whatever.
Just stole it, because you know what? You're infected with the rock and roll spirit.
I am. You know what? Here's the thing. The man was trying to keep me down, and I was like, so? I'm going to keep saying it.
Oh.
I was thinking we should change the name of the show to So Somebody Likes It.
Yes. So Ellipsis. Yeah. Somebody Likes It. Yeah, okay. It's good.
Like so what we're going to talk about today, other than So, is the video that Styx made. So they – now I'm going to be completely conscious of
it. No, no, just let it go, man. Be in the moment.
They made a video to play before they came out on stage, and then, you know, I guess they would perform
on the Doomed tour.
Is that what it was called?
No, it was just Doomed.
It was Doomed. Oh, I thought you were saying Doom, like the video game, or I don't know. But they had this video. It was a short movie. It was Dennis DeYoung's idea. They're all in it. They all play characters, and it's the prelude to the album songs. It's basically Kilroy, I forget his initials, but they spell out Rock.
Oh yeah.
He is being sentenced to prison, and then he goes to prison, and there's various and sundry bad jokes and blue jokes, as you'll hear. And then it basically ends we'll just watch the video, and I would highly recommend.
Well, according to you, this is the best
part. I feel like I'm
this
about to
this
punished.
Is by far the best part of this. This is so ridiculous and funny to me. I'll see if you guys agree with me that it almost makes up for listening to at least one or two songs on the album. Kind of balances out at least one or two. I mean, again, it's a shitty album, but I didn't want to shoot myself in the face after I listened to it, like some other ones we've talked about on this show, at least one. Other one.
Well, all I'm going to say is I felt like listening to this record was an endurance test.
I had to do it in shifts.
Sure, sure. But it's not. It wasn't as egregiously bad as, I'll just go and admit it, Slippery When Wet.
Yep.
Okay, that was tough. This was just hang your head in shame, you know.
This was just like, oh, these guys thought they were making good music.
Yeah, you feel bad for them.
If everybody could see the look on Ryan's face when he said that, it was like, oh, that guy doesn't know he has shit on his face.
It was the first time that I've ever actually looked forward to the commercials on Spotify.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, right? I love O'Reilly's.
I just felt like watching John C. Reilly and Mark Wahlberg record in the 80s
Feel
in Boogie
Heat.
Nights. Feel My Heat. What's the other... what was the one that they sang that was the theme song to the Transformers movie?
I don't know. I just figured it was Stonehenge, but it's probably...
Okay. Yeah, okay. All right. All right, so we're going to watch that. I don't know what the name of it is, but the Kilroy Was Here short video, and one of us will figure out what the name was by the time we come back.
Moms and dads, I see the future. I see a future without rock and roll music. As I speak to you now, young people all over this country are burning guitars and records. Burn until we together have eradicated this vile plague that Elvis Presley brought down upon our nation.
Attention, prisoners. We, your ever-present and ever-helpful Robatos, will now serve the usual evening meal of Dr. Righteous Fried Chicken. Like your fried chicken breakfast and lunch, this has been contributed by Dr. Righteous and members of the Majority for Musical Morality.
Your mother was a Toyota.
He's got no rhythm, huh? He's got no rhythm.
You can't stop the music, you bastard. This is Jonathan. Jonathan Chance. Long live rock and roll!
Jonathan Chance.
This is your formal notice, Kilroy.
Roboto, your statement has no meaning. You are in error.
Error?
Yeah, your error light is flashing.
I have an error light?
You mean to tell me you didn't know you had an error light?
No deviance, Kilroy.
No, no, no tricks. Come on over here, look in the mirror. Come over here. Look at this.
Error?
Right over here, behind
error?
Your neck.
Error?
Kawasaki! Oh, that's a Nissan Sentra Scooter.
broke them, hurt them. Oh, my balls.
Is there a little bit of Idiocracy in
it's like Idiocracy in what we, in what meets, we just meets Big Brother 1984.
Meets the Apple commercial. Like,
meets the right meets yeah. Metropolis, if you want to go back that, you know, Ritz, if you look at the way that the Robatos were designed, there's definitely a hand, and somebody's had seen Metropolis.
Well, apparently they
the
have
Fritz Lang movie.
Apparently they have testicles and anuses though, too.
Right, and apparently they give, if you're a prisoner in the prison where the Mr. Robatos are your prison guards, the prison conveniently provides you with a manual of what not to do to the Robatos to shut them down.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Which is quite nice of them.
Sure. Because they'd be like, how do I shut these guys down? I'd be like, oh, here it is in this pamphlet in my jail cell.
Just make sure you don't do these things, and they'll continue to oppress you.
And then the robots, who's like, hey, by the way, something really bad is going to happen to you tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Hey, come over here and look in the mirror. Okay. Like,
and then he punches the robot, and the robot's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Oh, my scrotum, my rectum, oh, my balls. There's a little slapstick in there, too.
Yeah. No, it is.
I see
it's
what
a little,
you did there.
There's a little bit of Keystone Cops situation going on.
I think this whole album, quite frankly, is a little bit of Keystone Cops.
Yeah.
And are the inmates are running the asylum.
Well, you have to wonder how much of this they took seriously.
No. I think they took the whole thing seriously.
I think they did, too.
There's a lot of hubris. I mean, these guys were coming at the tail end of the 70s, which was the apex of the rock star,
over the top.
This like, came out in 83.
Self-indulgent.
Yeah, but it's still. Yeah. It's at the tail end of that, and you know their biggest albums were in the late 70s.
Right, but like Domo Arigato is so disco laden.
No. I'm not saying the music right, sounds like right, it's from that era. Right. I'm just saying that there's hubris involved, and let's do a movie and let's just ratchet it up, and of course nothing we can do is going to be wrong.
They had no idea how to get out of the excess of that previous decade.
Right. Can I say one thing about this? There are so many great lines in this movie, so many wonderful turns of phrase. But my favorite has to be when they find out that Kilroy has escaped. And they say, Kilroy, convicted rock musician /
murderer.
Former rock musician / convicted murderer. So, like, they, it mattered more
that he'd been
that
a rock.
He was a rock musician than...
Former.
Yes. That he was a former rock musician rather than that he had murdered somebody. Which, by
I
the way...
I also like that the Rock and Roll Museum is, like, is designed to show you how bad rock and roll was
and, like, how... glorious life is now that
and
it's
there good. Is like a there is a it's a series of sort of animatronic exhibits, you know.
It's like Madame Tussaud meets Chuck E. Cheese,
kind of.
That's a good assessment. There's Jimi Hendrix, which is what you hear in the beginning. He's like
championing destruction.
Yeah, he's like, yeah. Sex, drugs, rock and roll, everything that's bad in life.
So if somebody actually goes to the trouble, sit down and watch this, which we highly recommend that you should
do.
I do not. Except for Phil.
Yeah, you're wrong. It's highly amusing. 9 minutes of your life. You'll never go back and watch it again, but you will laugh.
If you listen to it now, it'll be a totally different type of summer camp. So
maybe start off with that and then go to the album.
Yeah. Anyway, so
well, that's how it's meant to happen too. That's the other thing. It ends.
Well, they play the album like in its entirety from start to finish at the shows, correct?
Yes.
I have one thing to say and then a question. My thing to say is, I think that we've uncovered the idea that maybe some of the rest of the band was more all in on this record than has been led to believe. And I make that assessment by virtue of the fact that Tommy Shaw appeared to really be trying to act in that.
No, he was trying
really
real hard
with his acting.
Yeah. This will be my big break, guys.
Yeah.
Then I can leave.
So they had
what was
the
thing that he found? The rock code.
This is rock code. That's what Kilroy wrote before he went into prison, and he's got like some like acetylene torch.
So here is my question. I put it to shame, but I put it to all of you. Like, if there were a couple of things that if you've never seen this video before that you need to prepare yourself for in order to see the video, what would they be?
Well, for me, and I've been disproven, but I promise once I brought it up to everybody that they agreed that my initial assessment of this was correct, just purely based on appearances, But the head, what was his name? Dr. Righteous. Dr. Righteous, when they show him up on the screens, just like it looks in the Apple commercials in the 80s, he appears to be, to me, African-American.
No, he looks like
very black. He looks like Lando.
He looks like Lando Calrissian.
Yeah. I mean, he looks like, but apparently he was played by the drummer James Young, who is not very much not black. But so they
show. He serves fried chicken.
And that's what serves.
Righteous fried chicken.
Righteous fried chicken. To all of the prisoners, they get breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They get a box of fried chicken from Dr. Righteous. And I was like, the
and
first
they nearly
time I saw
break
it,
out into like a West Side Story.
Yeah, that happens too. But the first time I saw it, I was like, this guy is black and they're serving fried. There's no way that this could be true. And I guess it's not, but I would go and tell anyone to go see this and see if I'm lying about this.
No,
he looks
it's
like
what it looks
Lando
like.
Calrissian.
It's pretty silly.
Right. And really, this is silly. What Parliament Funkadelic was missing because Dr. Funkenstein didn't serve shit.
No.
Wouldn't they, like, come down on a mothership or something, though?
Yeah, but they just shot you with the bop gun. They didn't serve fried chicken.
You don't know what they served up there.
No. No, we don't.
Okay, guys. Well, listen, I know that you guys enjoyed that as much as me, or at least a few people.
I enjoyed it.
It was
I'm
going to
use the air quotes on the enjoying.
No, it's funny.
Yeah, and it's funny.
It's funny. You don't ever have to go back and see it, but I'm glad that you watched it. And there are certain lines, I think, that we'll always know. We'll always have.
The sad thing is like years from now, I'll be having what's supposed to be an important conversation with somebody, and then I'll use this as a reference, and then we will never talk again. Like
right.
whoever
well,
it
they,
is,
they, no,
it could be
right.
my parents.
They won't get it.
Like, yeah,
they're like, oh my scrotum, my
rectum.
Well,
they won't get it, and if they do get the reference, then you're like tighter than ever.
Well, which is
right.
probably also
or you
bad.
Don't
yeah.
know
or yeah, or like yeah.
Right, then you find
like,
a new dungeon master.
Genuinely like exactly. it. You just need that person not in your life.
Okay, well, we're going to go back into the body of the show, which is about something totally different, which is Styx's record, Kilroy Was Here, and we'll have a little bit of a wrap up, and then we'll go to a current affair.
There's a publication called Ultimate Rock Magazine or whatever.
I'm pretty sure that's not exactly it, but I want to start one now called
Ultimate Rock
Ultimate
Magazine.
Rock Magazine.
Or whatever.
Yeah, or whatever. It's the whatever part where you can get into really interesting stuff. But anyway, these guys wrote their take on this record 32 years after the fact. And said something along the lines of, you know, this was the record that broke up Styx, and you know, there was a little bit of an indictment about this record, and it sounds like plenty of people have taken pot shots at it. But the thing that's different about this one article was that Dennis DeYoung ended up reading it, and he wrote a rebuttal. And the website, either they sent it to the website, or the website got wind of it, and then they printed it. Like, as an addendum to the original article.
It printed it in its entirety.
Yeah, in its entirety. And so I'm not going to read all of it. It's like five paragraphs long. But I'm going to pull out a few things that I think are kind of interesting.
Read how he addresses them in the beginning. Like, it's just so – he's crazy.
Yeah, it's like, hey, everybody. Clarification, Kilroy. Clarification, Dennis DeYoung. Why do I even bother? I saw this article recently, so here it goes. But first, you must read the article. It's not as bad as these things go. So he's, you know, trying to make friends right off the top. Anyway, he says, no, I said no, all caps. The band did not object to another concept album. We had just scored our biggest grossing tour, both financially and critically, with our first number album. I assume that the number one should have been in there. So there was no resistance concerning concept albums. The band objections came from two directions. The acting, which he puts in parentheses, totally understandable. And the cost, in parentheses, also understandable.
So he knows he's kind of like...
Well, yeah. Like, here's the thing. It's like, it kind of makes me like Dennis DeYoung better. But anyway, he goes, there was never any discussion about any of the songs on the album regarding musical style, not even Roboto. We had first put our toes in the water of techno with Too Much Time on our hands, or Too Much Time, I guess is the name of that song, with the synth bass driving the track to great success, giving Tommy his first official top 10 song. We all contributed to Roboto's arrangement and had a fun time trying something completely new. Remember, Roboto was never intended to be a single. Ami, I guess he's not really much of a typist, had brought the vocoder. Vocoder, yeah. To the band on Paradise Theater, and I'm not sure, and if I'm not mistaken, and I could be, he did the voice of the Roboto's intro. The Tonight's Tonight, et cetera, on AD 1958 and Best of Times, I believe, was him as well. So anyway, the point being is, like, they mixed it with everybody, and everybody seemed to be on deck at that point. So he said, I did not dominate the album musically. I wrote three songs plus the reprise. Tommy wrote three songs and JY two. As I've said before, we are woefully...
There's only nine songs on the album. That's 10 tracks.
I don't know. I don't know. It's his math.
He already said he might be mistaken about some shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's three kinds of musicians.
This entire album was a mistake. But.
Yeah, exactly. He says, as I've said before, we're actually... This, I think, is an interesting insight. He said, as I've said before, we were woefully short a rock tune in the vein of Renegade. What a difference
that
would have made.
Isn't that a single by Bon Jovi?
No, you know,
Renegade is a genuinely not super shitty stick song.
Yeah, right? and like sort of more indicative of those of us who were in the Burbs thought maybe that band would be going before this record came out. So anyway, yeah, he said
the heavy metal thing was their attempt at the rock music on this.
Well,
record,
basically, I think what he's copping to there is that Tommy Shaw should have had more of a handle in. Or like,
yeah, he's,
a bigger
he's
part
the
of like,
the rock id, I guess, of this band.
Yeah,
he was kind of the magic ingredient. Once he joined them, is when they started like kind of skyrocketing.
Tommy,
yeah. So anyway,
same thing with Kilroy. I mean, like, you know, he was Jonathan Chance. Like he was carrying on Kilroy's rock and roll message.
Right.
Kevin, you know? Was there any more of that you wanted to read?
Yeah, just a couple of things. So basically, there's a little bit of thumb wrestling here about like. What was supposed to be a single and what was not supposed to be a single, and basically what the, you know, it sounds like the record company overruled the band and chose High Time as a song that they were going to put out, which is, not surprisingly, terrible. And then finally A&M reported to us that Kilroy had sold, this I think is kind of interesting, A&M reported to us that Kilroy had sold 2 million copies and they never tell you more, this is his language, because then they'll have to pay you on it. Still, it was one-third less sales than what we'd become accustomed to. And so then he makes a comment about sort of how Michael Jackson never sold as much as the record with Billie Jean on it or whatever.
Thriller.
Yes, also that. So anyway, he says it's a pretty high bar to vault, I must say.
So he's saying like that the label was angry with them for not selling
three or
4 million copies?
Well, the inference is that...
That the accountants are hiding.
That the accountants may have hidden stuff, and that there was no way for the band to know, but that it did sell at least 2 million copies, and they got paid for that, but he thinks that maybe it sold more than the label let on. And we don't, you know...
It was before Nielsen, right?
But again, he's already talked about the fact that he has a dubious memory when it's...
Well, right, and he's in it. You know, he's sort of in the unenviable position of like having to sort of defend his role in what is now sort of
a reviled piece of shit.
Yeah,
I mean, it's reviled by us, but is it reviled in the greater Styx community?
Well, okay, or just forgotten?
I think it's reviled by like probably Tommy Shaw.
So we have one more. We're gonna do one more clip here, and I'm trying to decide. There's actually one song on this record that I think. It's not something I want to listen to.
I hope it's a ballad.
It is.
It better be a serious panty dropper. Okay,
but I think it's a good song.
Yeah.
Like, which is weird.
Talking about Just Get Through This Night.
Nope. Haven't we been here before? Just Get Through the Night is horrible ballad.
Just Get Through the Night.
But haven't we? These
should have been titled Just Get Through This
Fucking
Album.
Cold War, I think,
is
the second worst song on the album. So, the second worst song on the album or the best song on the album? You know, okay, I'm not going to play the one. We haven't even talked about it, that I thought there was a good song on this. We'll do Cold War because it just fits right in.
Is that a ballad?
No, kind of.
Are they all ballads?
They kind of are. I mean, I don't know. They're supposed to be rocking it.
I hope that robot shows up here and kills me before I have to listen anymore.
I think I'd rather listen to Babe.
The garage door right now.
Sure, we'll get Molly.
I just want to see robot testicles.
Let's listen to Cold War.
And then
die.
Let's like, not
and
talk
and
about this record.
We don't need to talk. We'll just go straight into a current affair, and Ryan will tell us what we're doing.
Yeah, okay.
You'll hear it before.
Sounds good. Please, something different.
Please.
to bring me to my bended knees. And if I could only talk to you, I'm sure that I could make you see. Cause time has a way of bringing even mountains down, down, down. Storm clouds are coming, I suggest you head for higher ground.
Fucking thing sucks!
Hello, everyone. I'm Ari Povich, and welcome to this special edition of A Current Affair.
Ryan's coming out.
Yes. It's like every week is a little bit of disco week.
Yeah. So that was a little bit of Do You from Spoon's
last release. That might have been the greatest thing I've ever heard.
In context?
In context. Like,
that's exactly, like, I'm like, well, what fits the parameters? Come out in the last year. That sounds nothing like Styx.
Phil literally looked around and kind of begged the air. Will you guys please invite me back when there's not something like this that we're listening to?
Giant turd.
Oh, you're just never going to know.
Great Spoon song. And Spoon has got, I'll bet.
They got a lot of good songs.
15 to 20, I think, just to me, like classics.
Well, man, if somebody ever tried to make a greatest hits, I think they'd be hard-pressed to keep it to two
CDs.
Dude,
that would be in every dorm room in the country.
I think it would have to be a two-CD set.
But can I say one thing about this band that I find very interesting is that not a big fan. Well, I mean, they've always had albums with good songs on them, but until probably Girls Can Tell, that's when they really started hitting their stride. But even that record was somewhat uneven.
It was uneven in spots.
And then Kill the Moonlight, same thing. But since then, excepting one record, and I can't think of what the name of it was.
It's the one right before this, I think.
No, not
Gaga.
The one before that. Gaga 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 was great.
There's probably a little bit of subjectivity in this.
Well, okay, right.
That
but
might be the
I'm
mark.
Saying there, yeah. There was just one album that seemed that's a little that kind of dropped off, and I thought was a little bit forgettable. But they are, and there's no small reason why I'm bringing this up. They seem to get better with age, unlike most bands, excepting the late period Flaming Lips when they kind of really hit their stride and changed their sound.
Oh, from Yoshimi on.
Well, Soft Bulletin. In no small part. The Flaming Lips resurgence began with Dave Fridman, who produced this album or co-produced this album.
Anyway, sorry to sidebar on you, Shane, but I do think that I thought the video was well executed. I do think that it was kind of interesting that
there's a twist at the end.
Was some sort of erstwhile cab driver.
I love this part.
Well, there's like a sullen girl in the back seat, and mostly you're just watching him drive around in slow motion while there's carnage going around.
I felt like. You watch him drive around and there's carnage and it looks like for most of the video and he's got like bruises on his face and a big cut above his eye with a bandage on it. And I was just convinced like he caused like this pileup and he's just slowly trying to get away, albeit at a very low rate of speed, trying to escape and flee the scene.
Well, but that's how people escape in L.A. It's like you have to wait for the cameras to get there and then they, they sort of follow along. It looked like a Los Angeles
like OJ.
I was a little bit of OJ with giant toddlers.
I was glad to know that I was verified in my assumption that that was a giant stuffed bunny that was.
Oh yeah, so
oh yeah, you mentioned something like yeah. that, and I guess it was I quick enough that I didn't
thing.
Notice it.
I didn't know if it. I thought at first it was like a statue melting.
So the twist at the end is that there's giant children attacking the city.
Not attacking the city on purpose. They're playing.
No, they're just kids. Yeah. But
and there's like a big rubber dodge kickball.
You know, it's like the cutest Godzilla ever.
And if anybody has ever been a parent, that's exactly what it's like. Like, oh, you're like,
I don't know.
Thing,
it's exactly what
oh,
it's
dude,
like.
It's exactly what it's like. Mark,
many, many days it feels exactly
like. Yeah, you're like, you're
I
like
remember
that.
Mark's
Here is
like
my
then,
utter
like,
destruction.
What, probably so, 2.5-year-old kid just running around like a maniac in the backyard, buck naked. At some gathering we had, and you guys just could not corral him at all.
Yep.
And
at the risk of...
and had we been downtown, it would have been this video.
Years ago, I don't know, Shane, how many years ago? Like, at least 5, maybe longer.
Around 5.
Yeah. There was a sort of pop-up karaoke thing that used to happen at a bar up north, and Shane was there, and anyway,
bartending, weren't you?
I was bartending.
Yeah,
yeah, and it was Mike McCarthy came in with Jim and Britt, and so we were talking, and Jim was like, "What is this?"
Because Jim Eno,
the drummer from Spoon, yeah. and Mike McCarthy, the producer, who I've known all of those guys for a long time, they were like, "What is this?" And I was like, "Oh, it's karaoke." Underground and you know da 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 and they were like who?
And the MO can we share with the audience like so the MO of Karaoke Underground is that it's
karaoke but it's not cheesy karaoke
it's karaoke by bands that you want to listen to
sure
the yeah. Smiths the Cure but I mean even like Mountain Goats and it
well and there's Sex Pistols
and these guys we should get one of those guys on the show one of these days but like basically it's a pop-up setup and so they don't have a regular place they do it and sometimes on Saturday nights they do it at a bar up north
yeah once first Saturday
so
yeah.
Britt as I recall it and I wasn't there but Britt like went looking for Spoon songs
well yes he did he goes no it was so funny because I've known this guy for a long time and one of the things that if you get to know he's very
he's shy
right he's very reserved and but he's got a really droll sense of humor but he's very yeah he's shy and so I'm talking with Mike and Jim. We're laughing. They're like, "Who? Did? Because basically, they would have had to, the way that they were doing, especially at the time, they would have had to re-record their songs, like with their bands, and they had to get them as close to this. And they were like, "Oh, there's all these different techniques you can do to remove vocals from a song." And we were talking about that. And while we're doing that, Britt goes, "Oh, I gotta know if they have any of my song or any of our songs in here." And he's looking through and he finds a song. And it's like, I was like, "Go, you should go sing one. Put yourself on the list." And he was like, "No fucking way." And then Jim was like, "You have to do that. You have to do this. You have to do this right now." And so like he's like, so eventually he and nobody saw, and by the way, this it was packed bar and it was all populated with like 21, 22, 23-year-old.
They had
people.
No idea.
They had no idea.
No idea.
And he went up and he gave him the song. And normally they would, you know, put you on the list.
Do you remember what the song was?
No, I actually didn't
and
know the song.
And I don't either.
Like, I didn't even know what the song was. Like, it was on an earlier record. I think it was like, anyway, it doesn't matter. But so they just put him right to the front of the line, of course. And so he goes up on stage in this tiny little bar that's just surrounded by all these, and like there's this murmur.
And he's tall.
And he's very tall. And there's tall. This murmur of excitement. And then they notice that he's there, and it goes, like no sound.
Nobody spoke.
No. Yeah. And it was just, it was so, because I've known this guy for 20 years.
It was surreal.
It was like, surreal, yeah. It was funny. It was so, but the funniest part to me, other than the fact that he actually did it, and it took us a while to egg him on.
I guess there weren't like video on every phone at this point. Cause like
No, there was, but I mean, it was like, I mean, this wasn't that long ago. This is like 2010. But having said that, the funniest part for me was he still read the lyrics off of the monitor.
Well, how many songs has that guy written?
I know, but you no, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how many songs you've written. You're still gonna do it, like
so, as if it's karaoke.
As if it's karaoke.
So, which it was. And so the postscript to that was, I was in a bar in downtown Austin a week later. And it was right after this particular bar had opened, and I'm camped out with a friend, and who should walk in but Brett Daniel, and literally, he like it's the bartender and the three of us, including him. And so he walks in, and I was like, well, shit. And so all of this has happened in the short span of a few days, and I just seen this whole thing go down. And so anyway, I bought the guy a beer, and then I was like, by the way, I caught you at the Nomad last week, and here's the thing. This is the thing I can't quite figure out. I was like, you sang one of your own songs, but you appeared to be looking at the screen really close. And didn't you write that? How do you not know what
I've
the...
I've never heard of this part of
no,
the No,
this is totally true. And I was like, how do you... And he was like... And this is what he told me, and I swear to God. He was like, well, I was looking to see if it was correct. And I was like, that's bullshit.
Oh, yeah, you told me. You did tell me that. Yeah. That's because what are you going to do when you're singing karaoke?
The reality of it was I was significantly I had a few cocktails, and he was very, very nice to me and super cool, and we had a nice chat. But the reality was I did ask him, I was like, you know, why not wing it? So at the risk of dragging Phil into the muck here for what sounds like the third week in a row.
Yes.
I would like to bring you back for next week because I think it's the very first time that Phil and I met, which was...
Christmas?
Well, yeah.
2010.
Going on five years ago. We got into a pretty interesting... argument / discussion
/ beginning of a bromance.
And I'm not sure which it was more, but we'll go into that next week. We talked a lot about a record by the band Wilco, and Phil had the distinct opinion of that there was some dad rock going on, and so I thought that we'd cover the Tweety record next week and actually talk about,
because that is dad rock.
It's literal dad rock.
Literal dad rock.
Yeah. So I'm gonna take the next few days and work on the most groan worthy shit that I could possibly cause.
No.
Anyway,
see, that's
my
his.
Best DeVito. But yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I'm kidding, but
in
for
the
real,
superhero universe, he's like the sinister villain who only tells bad puns.
Yeah, and they're like, that has really no effect other than weirding people out for a couple of
seconds.
Yeah,
but they still want to defeat you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's true. Anyway, but yeah, so I thought it's one of these things that we talked about. I thought that their record is has some interesting points to make, and it's a little bit different than what that band, what his normal band puts out, and I think it'll be an interesting discussion.
And it's not a record that you know already?
It's not a record that I know a ton of. So
okay,
yeah, I don't know it at all. I've heard a single on the radio that came out.
I didn't even know Jeff Tweedy put out a
Tweety
solo
with his son.
It's the right.
It's the drummer.
Tweety.
Oh, and they just did a ACL tape,
yeah,
right?
Something like that.
Okay. That is true.
All right.
Well, cool.
Yeah.
All right, guys. I'm glad that everybody enjoyed this one as much as I did.
I'm glad it's over.
Nearly as much.
I don't know.
I enjoyed talking about it.
Wait. Would you say nearly as much? Because you're the one that actually enjoyed it more.
I only liked one song.
That's still more.
That's more than any
more.
Of us.
Still more.
Domo arigato, Mark. Domo.
Yes, you're welcome.
Yeah.
He's got a secret.
I don't know. Here's the thing. How long can you... That's a lot of years of fried chicken. If you're
don't
a prisoner...
Put that on your headstone when you die, by the way.
That's a lot of years
of... Hey, but... We're done. We'll be back in a week.
Screech wheels.
Sounds all good. Right. All right. I'm Shane.
Ryan.
I'm Phil.
Big Carl.
And Mark.
Somebody likes it.
That was my son, sent to a scrotum, rectum. Oh, my balls.